This is Mohit Kira. I'm an assistant professor of urology in the Scott Department of Urology at Baylor College of Medicine. I'd like to discuss a case of hypogonadism induced by chronic opioids. It's been reported that as many as 100 million people in the United States suffer from chronic pain conditions, and long-term opioid therapy is increasingly being used to manage pain in these patients. While opioids are appropriately used to manage chronic pain conditions, many prescribing physicians do not recognize the effect on the hypothalamic pituitary gonadal axis, or the HPG axis. Opioid-induced hypogonadism remains largely unrecognized. And this is particularly concerning because hypogonadism is associated with the comorbid metabolic conditions, particularly metabolic syndrome, type 2 diabetes, obesity, and osteopenia and osteoporosis. We know that among patients with hypogonadism-associated comorbidities, patients receiving opioid therapy had the highest incidence of hypogonadism. Epidemiologic data suggests that in the United States, up to 5 million men with chronic non-malignant pain suffer from opioid-induced hypogonadism. It is critical for physicians treating chronic pain conditions to screen for opioid-associated hypogonadism and to appropriately treat low testosterone with testosterone therapy. It is important to talk to your colleagues who treat chronic pain patients and reinforce the importance that they screen their patients for hypogonadism. Furthermore, it's important for clinicians treating hypogonadism to screen for opioid-induced hypogonadism and to monitor and treat appropriately. In a study we recently published, testosterone therapy increased serum testosterone in hypogonadal opioid users and non-users alike. The data suggests that with testosterone therapy, hypogonadal opioid users might be expected to have similar improvements in sexual function and mood as opioid non-users. Maintaining eugonadal testosterone concentrations in patients receiving chronic opioid therapy has overall important health consequences, particularly as we recognize the beneficial effect of testosterone therapy on parameters of the metabolic syndrome, insulin resistance, type 2 diabetes, obesity, and bone mineral density. A recent case I encountered in my clinical practice at the VA Medical Center enforced the importance of screening for hypogonadism and appropriately treating patients living with chronic pain. Victor is a 50-year-old veteran who returned for an annual examination. He's being followed for chronic pain caused by osteoarthritis of his knees. Additionally, he sustained combat-related injuries such as a right brachial plexus injury, a tibial fracture, and suffered from severe pain afterwards. His pain is severe and uncontrolled by regular analgesics such as NSAIDs. He takes oxycodone and acetaminophen back in 2010, but this did not control his pain. He gradually increased the dose and switched to oxymorphone, extended release, in December of 2011. Initially, Victor denied sexual dysfunction, but upon further inquiry, he reported loss of libido and a slight decrease in erectile function. On past medical history, he has osteoarthritis of the knees, a right brachial plexus injury sustained in 2010, tibial fractures sustained in 2010. His family history is significant for the fact that his father has a history of prostate cancer. On physical examination, he has a blood pressure of 148 over 99. His height is 5 feet 8 inches. He weighs 188 pounds. His BMI is 28.6, which puts him overweight. He has a waist circumference of 42 centimeters. On genital exam, it's within normal limits. On digital rectal exam, he has a 30-gram prostate, which is smooth, no masses, no asymmetry. He was given the Beck Depression Inventory Depression Questionnaire, and he was found to have moderate depression. On SHIM questionnaire, he was found to have mild erectile dysfunction. Laboratory evaluation revealed a CBC within normal limits, and he also had a lipid profile, which was normal. He had a PSA, which was 2.2, and on total testosterone, 149 nanogram per deciliter, pre-testosterone 2.2, and SHBG of 47. He had a repeat evaluation of the total testosterone, which again revealed a testosterone of 140 nanogram per deciliter, LH 1.0, FSH 1.2, and a prolactin of 15. Victor has a diagnosis of chronic pain and hypogonadism, and the treatment plan really is to continue with the oxymorphone as well as start testosterone therapy. In a patient with a severely depressed testosterone level, less than 150, and depressed LH and FSH, I strongly consider getting a head MRI to rule out a pituitary tumor. Other considerations are whether to start a short-acting or a long-acting testosterone formulation, and this really depends on patient preference and compliance. Those patients that are more compliant will benefit from a short-acting. Those patients that are not so compliant do better with a long-acting. Now, when we talk about patient preference, I always talk about the four C's. The four C's are cost, compliance, convenience, and concentration. All of these are very important when deciding which is the best formulation to use for patients. I also think it's important to take into account safety and tolerability as well. Victor approached me and said that he was concerned that his father has a history of prostate cancer, and he thought that this would testosterone also cause prostate cancer in him. And I explained to Victor that there's no data to support that testosterone causes prostate cancer. Well, Victor was started on a transdermal gel of testosterone, and he followed up in 4 weeks, and his testosterone level improved 315 nanogram per deciliter. However, he did not have any symptomatic improvement. Therefore, his transdermal gel was then titrated up to a higher dosage, and Victor then followed up in 4 weeks later. His testosterone level at that time was 480 nanogram per deciliter, a significant improvement. He also reported this time a significant improvement in erectile function, improvement in libido, and overall energy. At this time, I explained to Victor that we would continue to follow him every 4 to 6 months, and when he returned at 6 months, we did get a PSA, a hemoglobin, and a repeat testosterone value. At this point, we had started to notice some significant improvements in lean body mass and decrease in fat mass. In summary, Victor is a 50-year-old patient who suffers from hypogonadism secondary to chronic opioid use. It's critical for physicians treating chronic pain conditions to screen for opioid-associated hypogonadism and to appropriately treat low testosterone with testosterone therapy. I really believe it's important to talk to your colleagues who treat chronic pain patients and reinforce the importance that they screen their patients for hypogonadism.